Hello, good morning, good evening, and good night. Welcome to episode 17 of the Diminutive Collection. Hey, Christian.
Buenos dias.
Buenos dias.
I'm international today.
You are. How are you?
I'm good. I'm perky. The sun shines out. It's the early morning for those who are listening. We're recording this early in the morning as usual. I'm a little bit, a tiny bit hungover, I have to admit. I went out last night and I had a few too many drinks.
Did you? Where'd you go?
Well, by chance, I had a very tough day yesterday, so I needed to relax after work. So I met a friend and we had some drinks, but then we bumped into two other friends whose birthday it was. And then the next thing I know, I'm in JY Lake listening to filthy R&B.
Yeah. What time do you get home?
I got home about 2:30, but I...
AM?
Yes, I know. It's, yeah.
Oh my God, I literally have not seen that time in about, 20 years? I'm in bed by 10 every night. I don't know how you do it.
Because I'm young and youthful, even though I've got an aging carcass body that's making me much older. My mind is still young. It's the only thing that is these days.
All right, let's talk about Kylie this week. What has she been up to? What is in the news, Christian? What's in the word is out?
Well, the thing that got me excited, first of all, was, well, it's a bit of a throwback story. I don't know why it came up in conversation in an interview, but former footballer Vinnie Jones said that when he was working on that TV show that Joshua Sasse did, he warned Kylie that he was a no good...
Was this his Gallivant?
That's the program. I mean, the awful thing is, I remember watching the clips where she's running around the set with him and, you know, ripping open his blouse to reveal his delicious hairy chest. I remember thinking what a lovely handsome man he was, not knowing that he was going to do the filthy dirty on poor old Kylie. So, you know, Kylie would come and visit the set and he knew that he was a wrong'un. So he ended up having to tell her that he thought he wasn't perfect for her. And later on, after all the breakup happened, I think Danny Minogue got in touch to say thank you for warning my sister.
Ooh, good on Vinnie Jones. I love Vinnie.
Yeah, I mean, it's very honest. And obviously he knew, I think of all the people in the world, he probably would be able to recognize a wrong one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, totally. That was quite a nice fatherly advice to Kylie, I think.
I also seen that Disco has hit over 100 million streams on Spotify, which That's is very, very exciting. She tweeted, and I quote, "Just found out that Disco has hit 100 million streams on Spotify. Thank you to everyone who has listened to all the music for this era. Brackets, so far, wink emoji face." So obviously Disco 2 is coming because that's her alluding to so far. So there's more to come, right?
Well, I guess so. I wish we'd just do it. We're in September now. Surely it must be coming up soon. I'm on the edge of my seat.
It might be like coming out for the 1 year anniversary of Disco.
Which was November? No, October.
Maybe it was October, wasn't it? November? Oh, God. I have no idea.
November last year, didn't it? So yeah. It came out after Kylie.
But yeah, it was November 16th or something from memory.
Oh, right. Okay.
I could be totally wrong, but it's around that date. Yeah, so hopefully it'll come out then with like maybe an extended edition plus another disc with Disco duets, hopefully, or remixes. This could be a 4-disc edition album, which would just be incredible.
Well, hopefully it's like what Steps have done, and maybe there's 10 new songs and then a few kind of remixes. But I worry about remixes with Kylie because they've been very good in the past decade, haven't they? I mean, I used to like it when we had the Almighty mixes and the extended versions, but I don't really care about all these cool producer ones. They're always tuneless, aren't they? So I hope it isn't going to be a remix album. I hope there's 10 new songs or maybe some reworkings of the last album, and maybe she's included some guest artists and some of the songs, but hopefully there's a lot of new ones. I want to hear new songs.
Yeah.
Especially after a year. I mean, if this deluxe album came out maybe 6 months later, I would expect maybe, you know, the same songs plus maybe a couple more. But now we wait the year.
And we also haven't had a single for ages either. Because there was a rumour of Dancefall Darling becoming a single and stuff like that. It's strange that there hasn't been anything else to kind of prompt or keep everyone interested except for, you know, Hello Magazine doing their kind of throwbacks on her. Like, other than that, there's been nothing really that's getting interesting or keeping people interested in it, I think.
Yeah, because the thing is, she's been very prolific on social media with all her little throwbacks, but she's been very, there hasn't really been much current stuff. You know, there's no teasers, no
Even throw on a, like, release a remix of one of the songs or something.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't just have like a song that was just a song, to, like a lyric video song that was just out to keep people interested. It just feels a little bit odd. And there's been a massive gap, hasn't there? But I don't know, who knows? Hopefully something will happen soon. Otherwise, I think maybe this disco era, which I hate the word era, by the way, I think this disco era is already over. If she doesn't do it soon, then I don't care.
I also seen, and I don't know how I feel about this, Mara Wace. His collaboration with Kylie is due for release on January 22nd on his new album, The Retro Future. Could this song be the next year's big hit? Question mark. I don't know how I feel about this. I'm not a fan of his collaborations with Madonna. I don't know how what it's going to sound like. I think I'm just going to have to hold my tongue and wait and see how this sounds.
Well, I mean, I'm not particularly familiar with his work. The Madonna stuff, it was good for what she wanted. It was squelchy and a bit for me. I wasn't a massive fan, but then I don't know if he changes his style for people. I mean, I don't know what he sounds like in 2021. I mean, that Madonna thing was...
Is that 20 years ago, right?
Yeah. So, who knows? I mean, it could be. I mean, I always think producers are good when they work with certain artists, and sometimes an artist will bring out something different in them. So he could surprise us. The title sounds quite exciting, Retro Future. So it kind of sounds like maybe there's a little bit of
80s.
I look backwards, but with a bit of a modern twist. So maybe it's just going to be something quite fun, and we might actually really, really enjoy it. So it could be a sensation. As you say, I think we should just kind of hang around for a little bit and wait to see what actually emerges.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Let's talk about Step Back in Time now and look at the historical releases in Kylie's annals. So, Christian, we have On a Night Like This. So this was released on the 11th of September 2000. It went to number 2 in the UK and number 1 in Australia. And I think after the success of Spinning Around, the label had no idea what single to follow. So they chose this song, which is the cover. Have you listened to the original?
I think so. It sounds the same, right?
It's exactly the same. With a different singer. She sung this song twice in public, I believe. Once in Mardi Gras in London and another at the Radio 1 Big Sunday.
Did she not sing this at the Sydney Olympics?
Did she? Yeah, maybe. I didn't even. Oh, you know what? I was in Australia at the time. Yeah. I think I'd missed watching the Olympics because I was drunk. I think I was drunk out at a university thing. I was hammered. Oh, I didn't even watch the opening and closing ceremonies.
I was in the closing one. Yeah, she did On a Night Like This. Performance. You should watch it. It's quite. It's very good. Except I think they're not wearing horrible looking suits. That's kind of like cabaret.
Yeah, but I think she sung that after it was released. So she only sang this. She sang once in Mardi Gras and then another at Radio 1's Big Sunday before it was actually going to be released.
Oh, I see.
So I think after the reception of the two performances, it kind of sealed the deal on what single they wanted to do next. I mean, I love this song. I think it was a great follow-up single. It was mature. I think more mature than Spinning Around, I think. And I love the look and feel. The video was just stunning. Monte Carlo, it just dripped with richness. I just loved it.
I love the song too, actually. I mean, at the time, I wasn't a massive fan of Spinning Around. I mean, it's a song that I've actually really grown to love. So I really like it. It brings back lovely memories and it's got a really good... I just love dancing to it. And then when this one came out, it made me think of Waiting for Tonight by J-Lo. It had that kind of same kind of dance sound, which weirdly, I think William Baker says in that book I was talking about last week, he mentions the fact that when they chose On a Night Like This, it was kind of like a J-Lo type song. So I think maybe that was the feel they'd gone for. I thought it was a really good song. I really liked it. Very poppy. And I thought, oh, God, we're going in a good direction here. I really like the direction we're going in. The video I loved too. But then I didn't really understand the video, and I wanted to love the video, but there's something about it that didn't work because it opened with her face down in the pool, right?
Yeah, kind of like Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah, but then it ends with her walking into the pool, and then I just thought, no, I don't really get it. I thought we were going to get some kind of real sinister, dark video where Rutger Hauer, may he rest in peace, he might murder her in the middle of the song. But yeah, it didn't end in the way I wanted it to. I mean, I was kind of waiting for Michael Barrymore to appear. I'm only teasing.
Stop it.
Tragedy follows him around.
Yes, of course. I love this song. So this was the only anniversary this week, which is quite interesting. We've got a few good ones next week, but we'll hold that for then. Should we go to our Finogue?
I was just about to say the B-side of this song was really good, wasn't it?
Because
it
had Ocean Blue.
Yeah, I love that song. It was a really pared back acoustic song that was just really pretty. Is it available online? I don't know if it is. I can't remember. But it's I loved it. I thought it was a really interesting song. It was weird that it wasn't poppy and disco-y, but you know, it had a good melody, so I didn't care. And then you had
also, do you know what else it had? It had Your Disco Needs You.
The Almighty Remix, the 18 version, which made my eyes spin. Yeah, let's talk about that for 15 minutes. So yeah, I mean, but that 8-minute version is just sensational. It really is. It's just, there's so much, it's one of Almighty's finest moments because of all the elements, you've got all the kind of distorted vocals at the beginning, you've got the ridiculousness of the song, obviously, and it's just so relentless. I honestly can't get enough of it.
I love it for you. I love it for your enthusiasm, and I love it for you. All right, should we go to F and Oak?
Oh, yes, if we must.
This week, we are joined by 21-year-old Hussam from Canada. Hi, Hussam.
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
Yeah, really good. Thank you so much for joining us. And we are dying to know all about your love of Kylie. How did you discover Kylie all the way over there in the land of Canada? I say Canada, but it's Canada. Like, everyone's going to say, said it wrong. It's a joke. It's Canada, sorry.
No, that's okay. That's totally fine. I would say I'm probably a late bloomer to the Kylie fan club just because I started listening to her music in 2017. Sort of wow.
You're fresh.
Yeah.
What
yes,
song?
I was born. So the first album that really like gravitated towards me was Aphrodite. Oh. Just because of that extravagant cover of her in like the big Gautier blue dress that mm-hmm. I always loved. And then also just the way that the songs were produced, just the sound of the album. I don't know what it was. I think maybe it was because of how it was produced altogether. There was just something that like resonated with me. And that's sort of like where the Kylie exploration began for me.
How young are you?
I'm 21.
Wow, so we have a young, yes. The youngest Kylie Minogue we've had so far. Which
oh
is
my
amazing.
Gosh, I'm honored. I'm honored. I was born in 2000, same year, light year spinning around.
Oh dear.
I feel really old. I feel
so
really
do I.
Old.
But old enough to be your grandfather. Sadly. So before Aphrodite, had you heard of Kylie Minogue and had you seen things about her?
I hadn't read or heard anything about her. I mean, of course, in Canada, the one Can't Get You Out of My Head is like the biggest Kylie song. It still gets played here today. Mm. So I had subconsciously heard of her, but I just never put like two and two together until later on.
Ah. And so when you got that album for the first time, were you kind of mesmerized by it? Was it the cover that drew you to it first, or was it any of the songs that you'd heard from it?
I would say probably it was first Get Out of My Way.
Tune, absolute tune.
Mm-hmm. And then I would also say the title track. I really love the title track just because of the drums and the bass line. It's very like triumphant in its sound. Mm.
Do you think they should have released that as a single?
Yes, I think I'm always mad at the Aphrodite era because of the poor single choices. It had so much potential. First, I mean, obviously, Better Than Today, not a bad song, just not single material. Mm. I think maybe if they did Get Out of My Way, Aphrodite, maybe Can't Beat the Feeling and Put Your Hands Up, I think those would have been like really four knockout singles.
I agree. I think there's a very odd choice of singles on there. Better Than Today was, for me, a terrible, terrible decision. Mm. It was a really bad song. And there's a great remix of Put Your Hands Up, Pete Hammond one, which I think would have been a really great single. But you're right. I think there were better songs. I think Aphrodite would have been a good single. I really like Closer. Maybe that should have been an album track. But I agree. Aphrodite would have been a great, great song.
I was going to say, and then the music video. I could just imagine the music video, just like this whole triumphant thing of Kylie sort of being the queen of all the people.
Well, that's the thing. The song is so large. It's a big song, isn't it? And you kind of expect it. I wanted her to be surrounded by lots of, is it Aphrodite Greek? Lots of Greek hunks, you know, in togas. Mm-hmm. Well, that's Roman, isn't it? I'm getting all my history mixed up. Well, we know what we mean. It's
kind of like the female version of Ben-Hur, right? Where she's on the chariot and like the horse races and stuff.
Exactly. God, that would have been perfect.
Really incredible.
Literally Ben-Hur, but it could have been spelled E-H-E-R. So
yes!
Ben-Hur.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And then all the fans would have been Ben Durs. Oh, that's a British phrase for homosexuals.
Massive homosexuals.
So once you heard Aphrodite and you kind of immersed yourself in that, did you then start looking backwards and trying to find out more about Kylie?
Yes, because 2017 was in between albums. So it was, I think when I started listening to it, I had about a year from when I first listened to Aphrodite to when Dancing was released and the whole golden era was starting. So I had a good amount of time to go back. So I started all the way back at the beginning with the PWL material. Oh,
wow. Yes.
Yes.
What did you think?
I like it more. I think there's a certain level of like fun that comes with the music. I think Stock Aitken and Waterman music as a whole, there was just a level of carefree and innocence. Like Rick Astley, I have to say this with an accent because I just can't say it. I can't say it how we pronounce it over here. Bananarama. The songs that they did with them. Who else?
Mel and Kim. Did you experience the joys that are Mel and Kim?
Yes.
And Samantha Fox. What do you think of Samantha Fox?
I don't really listen to her as much, to be quite honest. She was kind of under my radar until I heard the episode that you did covering her album.
And still under your radar. Were you familiar with Stock Aitken and Waterman music before you researched Kylie? You must have heard Rick Astley and Bananarama, I guess. So were they new to you, or what were you experienced to their kind of perky pop sounds?
I was familiar with Rick Astley. excuse me, sorry. Now I'm losing my voice. I was like, Never Gonna Give You Up and Together Forever still play over here. So I've had plenty of time to get used to them. I actually love Together Forever.
Didn't they just have, didn't the people on The Voice just cover Together Forever for like on American?
It was an advert. Yeah, the advert. Yeah, it was amazing.
They kind of recreated the original video, kind of. It was really, really good. I didn't realize that song had done so well over there.
Mm-hmm. I think it went to that song and Together Forever. I think both went number one.
Jeez.
Wow. So when you listen to the PWL Kylie albums, which are the ones that you, what kind of songs jumped out at you from the first four albums? What were your favorite songs from those?
I'd have to say Got to Be Certain. Wouldn't Change a Thing, just because of that drum sample, that mm-hmm. sort of like, Never Too Late, just because when she's singing towards the end of the chorus, it's like, never too late to change your mind. That sounds very flat. I'm sorry, I'm not a singer. It reminded me sort of like the melody of Jackson 5's I'll Be There.
Oh, yeah. What did you think of the Locomotion? And did you ever hear the Australian version of the Locomotion?
Yes, I did.
What are your thoughts? Are you team Kieran, who thinks it's amazing, or team Christian, who thinks it's an inferior to the UK album track?
I think both of them, I like both of them in different ways.
You're very sweet. I like the vocal. It's very Switzerland.
You mean one with the volume up and one with the volume down? Yes, the Australian one with the volume straight down, so you cut everything. That's right, I agree. It's so tinny, it's terrible.
What I like about the Australian the Australian one is her vocal, just because I think it's one vocal. They didn't like multi-track her like the British version. But I also like the bridge on the UK version, where they sort of like manipulated her vocals to like do the locomotion. That part I really like.
I think with the Australian one, her vocal sounds a little bit lower as well. It sounds deeper and richer. Maybe that's what I kind of like about that version of it.
Just kind of interesting, because I'm a big fan of the song, but did you love Turn It Into Love?
I do like Turn It Into Love, yes.
Oh, just like. I thought you might love that, but no, you only like it.
Out of the PWL, the four albums that we have of her, which would be your favorite?
I would say Rhythm of Love.
Nice. And your favorite track on that one?
It switches. It switches a lot. I would say probably the constant one would be Better the Devil You Know.
Were you surprised, actually, listening back, because you were obviously listening back to all her early albums in a very short space of time. So did you notice the massive change in musical style from the first one to the fourth one? Because by the third album, Rhythm of Love, you've got you know, Better the Devil You Know, Step Back in Time, What Do I Have to Do in Shock. They're kind of like really, they're amazing, amazing pop songs. And there are a massive jump in sophistication from album one and two. So did you notice that change?
Yes, even between the first and the second album, like you could tell that the sound was a little fuller. It was still the same like style of pop music, but it sounded a lot more cleaner in terms of production. And then you get to Rhythm of Love, where it's more dance music. And then Let's Get to It, which follows more like R&B, New Jack Swing, which, by the way, I like. I know Let's Get to It has some polarizing opinions from this podcast, but I really like the sounds of it, like the songs on the album. Like, I think it was a good progression for her, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's some great songs on the album. I mean, I know we've kind of said in the past it's been maybe a little, some of the production sounds a little bit lightweight, a little bit tinny, but the song, I really like the songs. I love Too Much of a Good Thing. I love Right Here Right Now. I love those songs. I think there's some great songs on there.
I think they made a mistake, and I think we might have mentioned this on the episode that we discussed Let's Get to It, but I think it was a mistake not releasing that album for outside of, you know, UK and Australia. I think it would have done very well if it was released in America, so to speak. Do you know if it was released physically in Canada?
No. So here's the thing. I started collecting. I love buying vinyls, yeah. And I started getting into them, like getting them like 2 years ago. And when it came time to find Kylie vinyls, the only ones that were easiest to find were the first two, because those were the only two that were like released. So no, the last Rhythm of Love and Let's Get to It weren't released in the US or North America as a whole, but I think they should have, just because they had the songs that could have taken the album somewhere, especially the four songs that she did with Stephen Bray.
Yeah. So what albums are you missing in your Kylie collection?
So I have the German version of Kylie. I just ordered Enjoy Yourself, so that will be coming soon. I have Rhythm of Love. I have Let's Get to It. I have KM94. And then I'm missing everything from Impossible Princess through to Kiss Me Once. So I have Golden, I have Step Back in Time, and I have Disco.
Oh, right.
Yeah, she hasn't released Body Language or X or Impossible Princess, Silly. I wonder what, it must be some issues with the label or something, but sadly they're not on vinyl yet. But as soon as they are, I think it's going to be a free-for-all with all the gays and the fans running to their, you know, nearest supermarkets to try to snatch their copies of these albums that are really highly anticipated on vinyl.
As I say, I think, because next year is the 35th anniversary of I Should Be So Lucky, so I think instead of doing another greatest hits, she should just talk to who she needs to talk to and get all these vinyls released.
Kylie can't do another greatest hits. She's had too many. Like, I have to put my foot down. She has had way too many greatest hits albums out in the market. She says, now stop it for a bit. But yeah, we do need to celebrate the big milestone for the first album and I Should Be So Lucky, which is, big massive party for that.
And when you heard Impossible Princess, were you surprised by that kind of change in direction? Because that's completely different to anything you'd have heard, completely different to Aphrodite and from the PWL material. So was that a shock for you?
It was a bit of a shock for me, just because it was a darker album than all the other albums in her discography, as well as the production. It sort of relied more on like pop rock and country in like some of the songs in particular. So, but I did enjoy it. I actually, it's in my top three for Kylie albums. So it would be Aphrodite, Rhythm of Love, Impossible Princess.
Nice. Oh, wow. That pleases me, because I really like that album as well. You know, you mentioned that you're a youngin. Do you preach the gospel of Kylie to your friends to ensure that they really want to get involved and get, you know, experience Kylie the way that you love her, or are they really not interested?
I would say they're not interested. Mainly some don't, like I'll say Kylie Minogue and they'll be like, who? And then others will be.
And then you'll be like, we're no longer friends. Like, it's been beautiful, yes. But goodbye.
Goodbye. Friendship over. And then there's others who, like, I know there's this one friend who knows of Kylie, but like would always rip into her every time, like, he would know that I was listening to her. Cause I guess he doesn't like her, which I know, like, it's a strange thought. No one likes Kylie, but
It's very bizarre. I mean, I watched something on YouTube the other day. And it was just a drag queen. Is it Michael Morgan McMichaels? She was on RuPaul's Drag Race. And she was doing, bizarrely, she did Aphrodite as a stage show. The song, she came out wearing a similar outfit. Oh, no, she was wearing an outfit that looked a little bit like the Get Out My Way video outfit, but she was singing Aphrodite. And I thought, well, that's interesting that they picked that song. So I was wondering if there was this kind of, you know, in gay clubs, gay bars, if they do play Kylie in the way they do over here. I mean, over here, they kind of play it back to back in certain bars. But I was just curious to know if, you know, if there is like an underground Kylie fan base.
I would say there is an underground Kylie fan base. The songs do get played, like in clubs and restaurants and bars sometimes, but it's more so like the big ones, and usually stuff from the Parlophone era onwards. So you don't really get any of the PWL stuff or any of the deconstruction stuff. It's usually like Spinning Around, Can't Get You Out of My Head, In Your Eyes, Dancing, like all of those.
Wow.
Because it's funny, on Drag Race, the only Kylie song that they played on Drag Race in any country was I Was Gonna Cancel, which was a very unusual choice, I thought, because over here no one cares about it, and I assume no one anywhere else did either. I guess it's a Pharrell song, so maybe that helped them place it, because she was on
I was gonna say it's the cheapest song they could get licensing for.
No, probably you're right, yeah. Jeez. What do you think Kylie should do next in her career? What would you like to see her do?
I would like her, I mean, the big dream would be for her to go on tour with the disco album. I mean, but of course, there's still a high amount of uncertainty on when we can resume live performances. I would probably, like I said earlier, I would love to see vinyl reissues. Maybe if she does have to do another greatest hit, sort of follow in the route of like, Take That and Sophie Ellis Bextor and re-record her hits. Sort of like another Abbey Road Sessions Part 2.
I think Abbey Road Sessions Part 2 would be good, but also maybe in a disco feel or a Christian's idea of a Baroque. Kylie does Baroque, or, you know, is that those kind of like revisiting her, you know, because she did 12 or 15 tracks, and can't remember off the top of my head, on the Abbey Road Sessions 1. So doing other songs from her repertoire, which is now growing, and she's got more and more iconic hits, to do it in a different way that is not stripped back. It's something completely different. Well, I think it's a great idea.
I'd love to see her being produced by or remixed by well-known producers, but not remixes that completely destroy the tunes and the chords. But, you know, they give the songs a little, you know, a little bit of an update. But then I'd be terrified to hear what some people would do to her songs. They'd be probably murdered and left bleeding in the corner. So
Sam, if Kylie was sitting here right now, what would you say to her?
Oh wow. I mean, of course, I would probably get into like, I'd probably burst into tears. I'm not sure. I'm certain the words "I love you" would probably be said multiple times. I probably tell her I love everything she stands for. I love her personality as a person. I always like the fact for Kylie is that she seems approachable, both in the music and like in interviews and stuff. And there's no air of like diva-ness from her, because after Fever, like the big success of Fever, she could have easily like got an ego and acted like a diva and been like, oh no, I'm not doing this, stay away from me, I'm like the blah blah blah. But she sort of like stayed humble all like throughout all this time, and never like it never seems like she's taking it for granted.
Just out of interest, what is it about Kylie at such, and this sounds patronizing when I talk about your age, but at such a young age, what is it about 50 something year old Kylie that appeals to you more than maybe some of the current pop stars around that everyone seems to love, like your Dua Lipas and all that kind of stuff? Because you seem very drawn to her, and you have a real devotion, which is lovely to see, but it's so unusual for someone so young.
So Kylie, to me, I would say, like, I like Kylie because her music's happy. Like, it's happiness, it's pure like serotonin in a 4-minute pop song, which I enjoy, especially during the last year. I've been listening to a lot more Kylie, just sort of to like pick my energy up. And there's also a sense of sincerity and genuinity with her as a person versus some of the other pop stars like that people my age would be gravitating towards. I just feel like there's from them there's like a wall up, like they're presenting sort of like a certain image, whereas Kylie, it's like Kylie's herself. Like you're not getting a certain version of her.
I guess she's one of those pop stars who's been there, done that. So, you know, once you'll find out one day, but when you get older, you kind of lose all the kind of it's not necessary to kind of wear a mask anymore. You just kind of become yourself and you become relaxed in yourself. And I think that's probably Kylie's success. You know, when I always compare her to Madonna in the sense that Madonna doesn't let go of that mask. She hides behind something and continually wants to play this role of an anarchist, while Kylie is very comfortable with herself, likes making music that she knows is fun. It's not making a political point. And I think that is maybe the secret to Kylie's success. And I think that's why we kind of like her, because she is like a big warm hug, isn't she, in some ways?
Mm-hmm. I think as fans as well, we kind of embrace even the failures, the successes and the failures. We're behind it 100%. And, you know, I think that is it telling, you know, thing about us as fans is we're very, very loyal. And I think, you know, we just need to keep forward and preaching the Kylie gospel to everyone that would hear. And your mission, Hussam, is to, in your little town in Canada, we'll have to keep pressing those words and keep getting, you know, your friends to listen to Kylie. So we really appreciate you coming on. And thank you so much for joining us today on the Diminutive Collection. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
It was great talking to Hussam. I love it when there was such a young Kylie fan. And you asked a very good question where I thought, you asked, you know, why is it Kylie? Why not a sort of a more current artist? And what he said was, you know, Kylie is pure serotonin in a 4-minute song. And I love that. I think that was really great.
Yes. Well, there you go. That should be one of her record sleeves, like a film quote. Yeah. Oh, no, it's lovely. And, you know, as we always say, it's lovely hearing all these voices. You're right. It's very interesting when young people show an interest, because there's such pressure for them to like kind of current stars like the awful Ariana Grande and that awful, hideous helium voice that I cannot bear. You know, the only current one I like these days, as you know, is Dua Lipa. For a while. But it's nice. It's weird. It's very strange. But you know what? Her music, I guess, transcends age and all sorts.
Well, if you want to get in touch, please do at thekyliesmileypodcast@gmail.com or hit us up on Facebook and Instagram at The Diminutive Collection. Well, that's it for this week. So, well, Christian, I'll see you next week.
Oh, with bells. I can't wait.
Bye.